this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Time out, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 38. S&P futures up 381. This is after a huge up day yesterday. Market can't seem to figure out which way it wants to go. We had the Fed chairman come out and talk the other day, and it caused the market to go the other direction. Now, whether something else happened after that, who the hell knows, but we obviously turned around and went the other way. Pretty hard to put your finger on exactly what the issues are. You see some stocks flying up and down here. I mean, the one I look at is right in front of me. I look at this Micron was, I'm going to say, in the last... Let's get closer. Let's go 1 month. We were 750 on 730. Now we're 920. That's kind of a number. With 1,000,000,001 shares outstanding, that's, what is that, 70-some billion dollars, $80 billion in 1 day. Now that's interesting. We certainly have Microsoft, which was... absolutely nobody wanted it for a while. Now all of a sudden everybody absolutely has to have it. Very strange. I wouldn't say that, well, classical market thinking would say that that's not a sign of a healthy market, but if you're long and it's up, it's healthy for you. We have Professor Kevin.
Yeah, good morning.
What's up? How are you? A lot of interesting stuff. I also look at this Caterpillar, which has got to be, although I think they got something going in the AI area, Kevin. Didn't they buy some outfit that does something with AI regarding manufacturing? Something, I don't know. So, but they're 3 and 4 and 2% up and down every day, which never historically has not happened. I mean, the information is just crazed one way or the other, and it's a lot of momentum trading. Nobody knows why it's up or down, but if it's up or down, you just keep pushing it. And the people on TV, if something's up, well, they knew about it all along. Here's why it's up. You got to buy more. And if something's down, well, they knew about that too. And I'm sure they told you someplace and it's down. It's really kind of a really an odd world when it comes to finances right now. And I don't know what the cause is. I don't know what I just know that we have people we have to do business with. So I mean, it's interesting dealing with clients and their stock, and it's quite the challenge. And you know what? We've been doing all right with it. So I guess that's okay. But I need,
Tom, I am convinced that it is unpredictably predictable.
That's probably a good
statement. By that I mean, it's hard to say exactly what's going to move and when it's going to move. If you could time that out, you'd be filthy rich.
Yep.
But the market's always going to react to news. There's always going to be shocks, and things are. And when I say it's going to react to it, it's not just that it's looking and saying, here's some kind of big shock, but it's always going to take a long time for it to find its equilibrium each time. This is just the way every system in the world works, is when it gets an outside factor that changes the makeup of the process, the makeup of the system, it's going to bounce around until it finds its new way. And some of those swings, I've you know, have talked about the notion of demand amplification and supply chains before. Some of those swings, it's called the bullwhip effect. And so it's going to start out with some wild swings before it sort of settles into something. The issue, though, and the reason that for so long it's been jumping around like crazy is because we have shocks like crazy. We're, you know, it's just a series of events that have major effect on the market over and over and over again. And that's, you know, and so you're never going to find any kind of an equilibrium. You're always going to be living in that, you know, in that wide end of the bullwhip cracking.
Well, you have some issues with the makeup of the market, which I think lead toward this. But when you say that, nothing there even begins to make me want to disagree. But we went a whole period of time, you know, and the most recent one was there was a period of time in the Obama administration, maybe even the first part of the first Trump administration, we're 200 trading days, 150 trading days, about a 1% move. Now, we can't go a day without that. I mean, it's the something else is going on other than just the news thing. I think it has to do with the way the markets are aligned right now.
I wouldn't classify it as news, Tom. I would classify it as events, which of course makes the news and gets reported. Some of it gets reported more than other parts of the news. But, you know, my point is it's the event that matters. It's the event that shakes things up.
I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is the degree is something I've never seen in 40 years. I mean, we've had stuff before, even the first Iraq war and all those kinds of things. It was never day after day after day. And I think a lot of it has to do with there's maybe less people involved in the electronics of the system are all of a sudden, if somebody, like this morning, Apple's down $26 on their earnings. It's 8%. Okay, so I think a lot of what we're seeing is, you know, I don't want to go through this whole again because I've done it a few times. You know, how the market was set up there. Everything was traded in essentially one spot. You had standing orders. You had all those kinds of things. And now I don't think there are any. There are very few standing orders. And I think what happens, if it looks like there's sellers in Apple, the people that are supposed to be making a market in there just pull all their bids. If the market order is liable to drop it down, God knows how much. I think the market's set up now, or lack of setup, and maybe the fact that there aren't enough firms and there's way too much margin going on. And I think a lot of these firms are gagging on the amount of options there are. And we keep adding options like by the day. Literally, they expire every day. And yet these big firms, and there's only probably seven or eight of them that bring all this stuff to the table. They have like the minimum on any single option, even if it's a penny, is $25. So I think you're having a lot of people just dodging orders. And I see the markets getting wider and wider every day. We probably went through the last 3 days, I probably personally went through 150 earnings plays, looking at every single stack that had earnings coming out. Kevin, I don't know why there are even options on half of them. There's weekly options, there are 50 of them are trading, and the markets are $3 wide. What's the point? I mean, somehow or another, we've overwhelmed the system somehow, and it's all part of this. Now, you know, plus
we don't overwhelm the people, but we don't overwhelm the computers.
No,
so
we've overwhelmed
air trigger reactions to everything that happens because it's all automated.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily help, because if all of a sudden everybody wants to buy 10,000 puts, the computer may say yes, but guess what? The firm can't afford it, right? So I mean, there's a lot of governors to this thing. It's not just, you know, some computer doing whatever the hell damn well pleases. I mean, there's clearly risk parameters, there's margin parameters, there's everything. I'm saying we seem to have gone down a rat hole here that combined makes the moves bigger than before, and it makes me very concerned about what if we actually had a massive move. I mean, what would it be? Who's going to be the seller or the buyer? I mean, sort of like, I mean, I went through that in the 87 crash. I'm very familiar with when it happens. And it just is, I don't want to go through that again, and I don't want to see the market go through that, but I'm looking here going, really? Hey, did you read this? I don't know if you did or not, but this article regarding Amazon and the tariffs.
No.
God, you can't, you know, Kevin, you read this stuff and you go, this has to be fiction. So, okay, we got these tariffs on, right? So Amazon said it recouped $600 million in tariff refunds in the second quarter. Oh, by the way, Apple, 5% of their revenue was tariff refunds. You know, good Lord. This is the Amazon. The company previously hadn't disclosed whether it would recoup tariff costs after the Supreme Court ruled many president. This is, by the way, out of a CNBC article by Annie Palmer, and I think we've actually quoted her before on anything about her. Amazon landed in hot water with the White House last year after it was reported that the company planned to display tariff-related surcharges on its website. I don't know if you remember that, where Trump called, who runs Amazon, Bezos?
Bezos doesn't own it anymore. He owns the lion's share of it. He's the major stockholder, but he's not involved in the business anymore.
Well, evidently, when they were going to list on their website how much tariff added to the thing, Trump called him personally and said, "Hey, we don't want that anyway." So then now they were decided whether or not they were going to actually go for the refund. Because remember Trump saying that he would remember people that actually demanded the refund. Well, of course, everybody demanded the refund. But previously hadn't said whether it intended to apply for the refunds. In May, consumers filed a class action. This is even crazier. Consumers filed a class action lawsuit in federal court arguing that they were owed refunds for paying tariff-related prices and alleging the company wasn't seeking refunds to curry favor with Trump. Okay, well, now then they did apply for the stuff, so they got their check. Amazon last April, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So now they're gonna issue, this is even gets more complicated with Amazon, because a lot of the stuff you buy on Amazon comes from a third-party person. Well, in that case, the third-party person paid the tariff, not Amazon. So that even gets more bizarre. So I don't know if those guys, I don't think, are going to refund anything to anybody, do you? I mean, I would doubt it. I don't even see how they could. But, I don't know. What if you and I...
Of course they could. If they were going to, they'd have the same capability anybody else would.
Well, but I mean, if we...
These newfangled computer thingies can track all that.
All right, so if you and I imported a widget, okay, from somewhere, and we sold that through Amazon, and we paid the tariff on the widget, would we have to have Amazon? Amazon knows who the customer is, do we?
Oh, yeah.
We do? Okay, so... Would we have to go through Amazon and their payment system?
I'm getting a cut of the sale. I get the sale. I get all the sale information.
But so would we get the person's Visa card number?
In fact, I may get nothing more than a notice from Amazon that I've made a sale, and it's my job to ship it to the customer out of my own inventory, unless I'm having Amazon manage my inventory.
But they didn't pay me, so since they didn't pay me, it'd be pretty hard for me to find out how to send the money back to them. I'm saying it's doable. I'm sure it is, but
you get a full accounting of all of it.
Okay, so they could do it if they wanted to.
They could do it.
Says many of Amazon's third-party sellers who imported their goods from overseas were forced to raise prices through the levies, and have since applied to receive tariff refunds. Outside sellers account for more than 60% of goods sold in Amazon's marketplace. Boy, it's still that high, huh? So we've identified this is the finance guy at Amazon. We've identified a limited set of circumstances where we can trace what we've passed specific import charges on to customers, and when we receive those refunds, we will proactively contact affected customers and automatically issue refunds to them. Otherwise, like any other large retailers, we'll utilize refunds to continue to invest in low prices for customers. There's a bullshit line.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. What do they say? Thank you very little? Anyway, so I talk about a murky. I had no idea it was five. It's going to be 5% of Apple's revenue this quarter, and are still down $8.
Well, yeah, because they're down $8 a share in revenue, or they're down.
No,
eight
just down
bucks.
$8 on the stock.
$8, yeah, because everybody understands that that's an event, one-time event. That's not EBITDA.
Yeah, it's just sort of an odd situation, you know. I'd just like to see a check for $60 billion, wouldn't you? I don't care if it was mine. I just want to see one. Boy, they...
Or you could have actual unearned earnings on someone's balance sheet and $53 billion and cause the stock to skyrocket even though you can't spend a penny of it.
Yeah, well, you know, there's all kinds of... Okay, it's all in the presentation, Carl, you know.
I'm sorry. I just had to stick that in there, Kevin.
That's all right.
I have a question.
We have, you know, sarcasm always welcome.
Here's one. Every once in a while, when Kevin's on, he's the guy I always throw my baseball trivia piece in, because something in the world is lighter than we always talk about this other crap. What is this? There's a question here. What was the greatest game ever that somebody had in Major League Baseball? Which, of course, is always an interesting thing. There's people with the four hit home. By the way, I was at Wrigley the day that Mike Schmidt hit the four home run. That was quite a day.
Windy day, if I remember correctly.
Boy, that guy was, boy, was he strong or what? That dude. One of them he hit. I don't think it ever got 5 feet up in the air more than the wall, Kevin, and it landed in the basket. Anyway, you remember a guy named Ernie Shore?
No.
A pitcher?
No.
Well, Don Larson had for a long period of time, he was considered the guy with the only perfect game, right?
And he did the only perfect game in a World Series.
I think he met him in the first perfect game.
I don't think so.
I'll check that. Don't worry, man. Anyway, a guy named Ernie Shore, the Babe Ruth of all people, was a starting pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. He walked the first batter, started arguing with the umpire, and got tossed out of the game. So in comes Ernie Shore. First, he picked the guy off first, then proceeds to get the next 26 guys out. I'd never heard of that. And, of course, it was not a perfect game because somebody had reached first base. But they claimed...
And he didn't start it anyway, so...
Right, and then he... you don't have to... Perfect game could be two people, right? Still a perfect game. I don't know how it goes in the rule book.
Yeah, for purposes of records, I don't know how they count that anymore because they've changed that rule back and forth a couple of times, but...
There's been a couple of no-hitters lately that weren't complete games.
But Ernie Shore doesn't get credit for a perfect game.
No, but, this, but he also has...
Matt might, but the pitchers don't.
He has something very unique. He averaged more than one out per batter in a 27-batter game while getting all the outs.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And in this case, I would call it a more than perfect performance in an imperfect game. How's that for a line? That's pretty good.
I like it.
Perfect performance in an imperfect game. That's a... I guess you could have a date like that, huh? You have a perfect performance and a bad date. I don't know. Can you do that?
I'm not going to run with that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to run with that one either.
That's just trouble.
Yeah. So, what do you suppose... what the Federal Reserve and what the Treasury is doing or not doing, and they've been doing this for a long time now, regarding the markets, I wonder what there, if any, there was any activity after the huge sell-off, after the Fed chairman's speech. If they said, "Oh my God, what are we doing here? We got to do something." If something got poured in, because this rally since then, with nothing really changing, is sort of interesting, wouldn't you say, Carl? I mean, it's a serious rally.
If you look at what's really going on, you just got the GDP numbers, right?
And they're down.
Okay. Did you look inside?
I saw the headline numbers in the other.
Right. So you probably didn't.
No.
Right. Okay. Essentially, all of it was non-residential fixed investment in AI.
Okay.
Essentially all.
So it's worse than what I saw, basically.
Well, the real number, X that, is well under 1% annualized. I think it's... quick calculator said it's 0.7, but that's annual, not quarterly.
But the deflator also went up, right?
Whatever. Okay. Well, what you just saw happen last night with Amazon, and by the way, Microsoft to a lesser degree, I haven't dug through their report as thoroughly. They're a whole lot harder to dig through, actually, than Amazon's is, simply because there's more businesses there, right?
Yep. Amazon, total revenue number was down, right, or something?
Okay, so here's the thing with Amazon, all right? And people in the market had better pay attention to this, because there is a really ugly problem coming here, and it's exactly the same problem that caused the detonation in 2008, in which I flagged in 2007. Amazon had $53 billion worth of non-operating cash, okay, if you will, non-operating creation. All of it from a circular financing deal with non-public companies in the AI space.
So in other words, so how did they get cash from those guys?
Well, they didn't.
Okay.
That's the point. It's the accounting rules require you to value things you invest in at their value, right? I mean, that's the rule. Okay, how do you value a non-public firm? And oh, by the way, if it's circularly financed, in other words, they're buying their compute resources from you in whole or part, then this is a self-licking ice cream cone. Now, if, and this is a big if, that particular line of business is a profit-making entity, whether it's publicly held or not, you can make an argument that this is a self-sustainable line of work, right? I mean, if I take in $1 billion and I have revenue of 1.2 and I've got 100, I got 0.1 of operating expenses, then I got 100 million in profit, and you know, gee, that's 9% ish, and it's a going concern.
Is this sort of a modern version of the goodwill thing?
Accountants have gotten really careful about that particular kind of intangible. Okay,
because it costs about 8 huge companies to collapse.
Well, yeah, which is why they've gotten very careful with it. This is sort of that, but it's not the same as that. All right. But remember, in early 2007, what made the hair on the back of my neck stand up and actually caused me to start writing the market ticker, set up the website, and start doing this stuff, was that Washington Mutual reported earnings. They were paying a 53-cent dividend, and they didn't have 53 cents worth of cash earnings with which to do it. The reason they said they could do this is that they had all of this on their balance sheet from negative amortization on these option arm loans. Now, by the accounting rules, that is an asset. But the problem with it is it only has value if you eventually get the money. Okay? So it has it's an asset, but it's of dubious value. Now,
well,
if you
one way of saying is it's let me see if I can rephrase this right and make sure I'm understanding it. What you're saying is it's an asset, but its only value is in its ability to turn profitability, or at least turn revenue, and use that revenue to pay for the asset.
Well, as an example,
pay the service provider.
Yeah, well, sort of, Kevin. So in the 2007 case, if I take out a $300,000 loan to buy a house, it's negative amortization. It's a negative amortization loan, and therefore its balance is now 350. Okay? The 50 is an asset on the bank's balance sheet. However, its value is only 50 if I can pay.
Yeah, okay. We're saying the same thing then.
Okay. Right. Its value is only 50 if I can pay. If I can't pay, its value is zero.
Except in that case, the bank actually has the house.
An auditor is going to come in and is either going to make you write the whole damn thing down, but certainly looking at your portfolio, this is why banks have reserves.
Except, Kevin, that wasn't being done, okay? This was because prices were going up in the real estate market in general. Everyone considered all of this to be money good, all right? And the problem was that the company was paying out 53 cents in dividends, didn't have 53 cents in actual
up to 2008, cash earnings. 2008, the single biggest, best piece of collateral in the world was the U.S. housing market.
Well, I...
Until then.
Chief, I understand this, okay? But the point being, they were paying out money in real operating expense that they weren't collecting in actual dollars.
That's what just for the listeners, how this... Kevin, you remember this because you were in grad school about it, the time all this crap was happening. The question is, the three of us decide we're going to buy Joe's hot dog stand for $1 million. Okay, so now we take assets from Joe's hot dog stand, which might be $500,000, and now we put them on our balance sheet. And as Carl and Kevin and everybody said on the show, when you do accounting, everything sort of has to match up, right?
So right. For every debit, there's a credit.
So $1 million cash comes out, and oh, by only $500,000 worth of cookers and buildings and delivery trucks come back in. Okay, so what do you do with the $500,000 extra? Well, it used to go into something called goodwill, which you would amortize over some, was it a 10-year deal, Kevin, or five or something? But also, people got clever and they say, no, it actually was worth $1 million. Or even worse, it was worth $2 million and we just bought it for $1 million. So they would actually take that to income, which was even more bizarre because, like Carl's saying, there was no cash there. The cash was you paid out. And
well, here's the problem, is that what you have here is that in every case today, all of these AI concerns are cash furnaces. Every one of them. There are none that have actual operating earnings in excess of their CapEx. None. So, the problem with this is that this, and you see what just happened with SpaceX, right?
Yeah.
And they're, okay, so now think about this.
Wait a minute, it's up $1.80 today, it's up to $1.14.
Well, hold on a minute. Yeah. So let's say that if I was the CEO of Amazon, and I bought a bunch of it at $200 a share a couple of days, you know, the day after it goes public, right? All right. I now, by accounting rules, today, I have to mark that at $112, right?
Well, sure.
Okay, well, guess what? The entirety of this position, $53 billion, is from mythical gains in equity that they have in one more of these companies. $53 billion.
Well, wasn't a bunch of the Microsoft shoot up because they weren't get caught enough of AI's but the expenses of other people?
Well, Microsoft doing the same crap, okay? So the thing is, the problem with all of this is that, I get it that the accounting rules, you know, require you to do this, right? But that you've got people that are not looking through this, and the reactionary result when Amazon's earnings report comes out is that the stock goes up enormously, right? I mean, you know, here we are. We're going to have another day of what we had yesterday with the same crap and, you know, some of these other names, Micron and everybody else. Nobody, as of now, has demonstrated that a single one of these companies has an operating free cash flow sufficient to cover the CapEx putting into this.
When you say sufficient to cover the CapEx, are you talking about cover the depreciation charge every month or...
Well, the depreciation and interest cost, right.
And cost of capital. Sorry.
Right, the cost of the capital and the depreciation, right. And by the way, everyone's lying about the depreciation.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. We talked about that before.
They're not lying about it a little either, Kevin.
No, but what they're doing is they're putting it on the books for way more than its useful life.
Well, depreciation schedules are to a large degree... I mean, you know, the IRS has very real rules about how that has to be done, right, for capital assets.
Yeah, and theirs is not the same as financial reporting and should not be mistaken for the same as financial reporting.
No, however, the reality is that in every single case, in my 40 plus years of doing, you know, this kind of stuff professionally, when it comes to computing and technology related assets of this sort, in every emerging area, in every case, you have an 18-month turn time if you're lucky. And the residual value on those assets, should you try to sell them after that 18 months, is maybe 10 cents on the dollar. Maybe.
Right, for those that don't are lost here, when if some firm decides, AI or otherwise, to spend $50 million on something, say it's AI, well, tax-wise, you'd like to be, assuming you're making $50 million, which you may not be, you'd love to declare that all an expense this year, right?
And by the way, Trump, one of the things that the big bag of barf did was to allow that to a much greater degree than it has been allowed in the past.
Okay.
Now, it has been intermittently...
For tax, but not for financial reporting.
Right, for tax reasons. Now
let me finish with the logic. The logic part of this is when you expend that for, say, a truck, and you're going to use the truck for 5 years, normally, although you can do double declining, we're not going to go into all that stuff, you essentially say, okay, we're going to the truck, if it costs $100,000, we're going to take $20,000 in expenses on the truck every year for the 5 years that we can use it. That's a normal depreciation. It's an asset. It goes onto your balance sheet as $100,000.
Straight line, yes.
Let's keep it simple and say that straight line. And what I think what Carl was saying, these guys are putting this AI stuff on there at these incredible amounts of money as an asset, the investment, you know, be it a plant or whatever it is, and they're saying it's a 10-year straight line. And I think what Carl is saying is it's really only going to be worth something for you for 3 or 4 years at most, because other people are going to catch up to you. So the idea...
No, Chief, it's really only going to be worth something.
Okay, but I'm just trying to make it so everybody can understand what the hell we're talking about. So you're saying that actually the degradation is a lot quicker than what they're saying. If they put it on their balance sheet and said, this is going to be poof in 2 years... Everybody look at it and go, what are you doing, right?
Yeah, let me
understand the way it shakes out is what that's going to do is it's going to lower the depreciation charge every month, every year, however you're calculating it, every quarter. Right. It's going to lower the depreciation charge, which is going to inflate the earnings and make the earnings look better for anybody who doesn't look beyond it. But when you get to the end of its useful life, say you get to the end of its useful life after 2 years and you have it on the books as a 7-year property, you're supposed to charge that down 100% when you take it out of service. Right. And that's the looming profitability hit that's hanging out there is, as soon as that starts to become, you know, the hits obsolescence. And if you're going to be competitive in the compute power market, it's going to be obsolete very quickly. You got a problem. You have a financial problem, and it's going to show up in a lot of different places. Is that a fair statement of what?
Simply,
let me
take it down to blue collar. The truck I mentioned is on there for 5 years. You drive the thing 24/7 for 2 years, and you have to junk it. Well, guess what? You got to take the other 3 years' worth, the other $60,000, and charge it to expense, right?
Yes.
Right. Now here's it's actually worse than that, though. Because, Chief, in your example with the truck, okay, you still have to be able to move the material that the truck was used to move.
Correct.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, what does that mean you have to do?
Go buy another new truck.
You have to buy another truck.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that's the same situation comes up here, and I'll give you a real world example from when I ran MCS. We bought racks of 28.8 modems when they first came out.
I thought you said rats. Racks. Okay.
Racks. Because customers wanted to be able to go out and buy one of these faster than the 14.4 ones modems and therefore have faster access to the internet. Okay. Okay, fine. As a service provider, I have to go out and I have to buy that stuff. All right. So I go out and I buy those. 18 months later, 28.8 is no longer very fast. Now there's 56K ones. All right. I couldn't sell the 28.8 racks. And it was a year and a half later. They were literally worth zero.
Couldn't you bring them to a Binnie's and put booze on them?
They weren't worth any money.
Really?
No one wanted them because now everybody, all the consumers, go out and buy a 56K modem and they connect your 28.8 and they only get 28.8. Because that's all you got. And then they go call your competitor and they buy service from him. Okay. So I have all this equipment that I had to pay for, and it is literally valueless.
Well, I mean, that's obviously the issue we're talking about.
Well, that's exactly the issue.
But how does a regular...
Chief, that's exactly what's going to happen here, because everybody and their brother is trying to... And by the way, Google has said... They've got their Tensor chip that they put in their Pixel phones, okay? They are working on that. Huawei over in China has their own processors because they build phones over there, all right? Everybody else, I mean, you know, Intel and AMD are working like mad on this stuff to try to dethrone NVIDIA, because NVIDIA has a 40% pre-tax operating margin. You know, well, actually, it's greater than that.
It's like 60. Yeah.
It's like a 60% pre-tax. Yeah. Nobody lets you get away with that without shooting at you, all right? Now, some of those will end up not being as good as whatever. I mean, that's the way technology works. You know, you try, you fail. Okay. All right, but not everybody's going to fail. Someone's going to succeed, and when they do, all those Blackwell chips that NVIDIA has been riding so high on are going to be worth a warm bucket of spit.
Okay, well, let's concede that you dig down into this more than most, and I deal with clients, and Kevin knows where I'm coming with this, because we had Kevin, you ran. I remember this like it was yesterday, because obviously. One of Kevin's best friends, one of my friends, Bob Golden, he's been on the show with us, and Bob knew more about accounting than anything. And I remember him being on one day, Kevin, when what's his name, Jim Cramer was you know, like he had 10 Viagra pills, talking about the guy who was running Sears and Kmart, and he was and how what was that guy's name? The guy, you know, wherever this guy went, he was a genius. You had to follow. Of course, both those companies were out of business. Because it turned from a retail play into a property play. And they had so much of this, so much of that. I remember asking Bob, I go, Bob, how exactly is one of my clients, or me, if I'm doing research for him, how the hell, sort of in the idea of how the hell can anybody know what Carl knows, because he actually spends the time to, I said, Bob, how the hell can I find out, get a list of all the properties where Sears, where it looks like they got one hell of a location. How do I know if they leased it, if it's somebody else's, if it's theirs, if it's fully depreciated, if it's not? How can I get any of this information that a guy like Kramer is spouting like he knows what he's talking about? And Bob goes, you can't. unless you know somebody and are willing to go through it for like 8 weeks. Because you're not going to get that information, because what these guys are talking about, you have no way of checking. Is that's right. Sort of what you're talking about, kind of to dig in here. You really don't.
Yeah. Well, basically, the problem is this: this entire
Eddie Lambert,
market today, the entire AI space, is predicated upon a premise that the business reality in every area of emerging technology for the last 40 years is all of a sudden going to be false. Okay? No, it's not. There is never in my history in this space, since I first started writing code for people when I was 13, for Christ's sakes, I have never seen an example where that's not true. Not once. It doesn't matter if it's in disk drives, processors, memory. It makes no difference what it's in.
Well, there's a huge discrepancy in views I get from people, obviously.
I'm going to
congratulate you for a second. Let me do it.
Yeah.
You have told everybody where the costs, and if people use the AI eventually, and maybe you don't even know it yet because you've got some kind of trial package, you're going to have to be paying for this, basically, out
right.
The behind. And yet, I've talked to two or three attorneys, one of them being Lou. What do you mean? Seems pretty free to me. So my question to Kevin is, Kevin, you're somewhat, obviously you're involved in the IT stuff at Ivy. What do you suppose the Purdue, Indiana, Notre Dame, Ivy Tech budget for AI is out 5 years? Do they know they're going to be paying 100 times more? Or are they budgeting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't paid close attention to the budgeting process. I try not to, even though I have to manage one. But offhand, I can't tell you. I probably could do some snooping around and find out what it is.
Well, if you listen to what these companies are thinking and what they're investing, somebody's going to be paying a boatload 5 years from now. Do the somebodies have any idea, I guess is my question.
Oh, somebody's are finding out right now. You know, I had beers day before yesterday.
Good for you on that, by the way.
With a local business guy, and he is. You know, he is talking. He's talking about the AI industry in general, and saying, yeah, everybody is finding out that whatever they think their expenditure is going to be, they spend it the first week of every month.
Right.
And that those are the tokens you're talking about, Carl, right?
Yeah. And that's the problem is that, you know, by the way, the side effect problems of this, there is a serious problem here too. Just as an example, you know, all these AI companies, when I was invited to this symposium, like 3 years ago now. And I pointed out that there was a serious copyright problem with the way all these firms were doing things, okay? And someone was very likely to get spanked. Now, whether, you know, exactly how bad that was going to be was an open question, and it was scoffed at by a number of the academics because, oh, well, you know, that would totally destroy this industry. They'd never do that. Well, the law is the law, right? Or at least in theory it's supposed to be.
Yeah, we kind of dropped that 20 years ago.
Well, we kind of forgot about that problem, right? So, they did get some of these firms did get spanked pretty seriously. All right, we're talking, you know, billion-dollar spankings are not anything to, you know, sneeze at, right? So what they've started doing now is bulk ordering books that from places, you know, Joe's little bookshop that he's got a bunch of stuff that's $2, right? They're buying these things in bulk. They're putting them through an industrial processing system that cuts the spine off of them and then industrially scans the pages. Now, this has been ruled transformative work because the original is destroyed. All right. So, and by the way, first sale doctrine is very well developed in the United States. If I buy something, I own it and do whatever the hell I want with it, including light it on fire. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. The problem with this is that in many cases, what's happening here is that these particular printed works, these companies may have just bought the last existing copy, and now it's literally gone because they've taken what was something in public distribution, and it is now only theirs.
Wasn't there a book about that, Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah, there was, wasn't there? Wasn't it sort of about that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, people talk about how terrible the Nazis were for, you know, for literally having bonfires, right, with various historical works. Every one of these AI companies is doing this. So if you want to support what is going on in the AI, I can legitimately turn around and call you a Nazi. And by the way, I'm probably being rather kind just using the word Nazi. I can come up with some really more.
Well, one of the listeners years ago told me if I ever see one at a house sale, buy a Webster's dictionary from about 20 years ago because you'll never be able to figure out what words mean unless you have one of those.
Yeah. Well, just look at what happened to the word vaccine.
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
All right, so let's throw out just a little bit different idea, because we're talking about, you know, people using up their tokens and so on. And a lot of people would tell you, oh, no, I use free ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's, whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, here's the catch. If I take, let's just say I download from my general ledger into a spreadsheet, and I want AI to do some modeling for me. I want it to do whatever. Using some of the really basic functions. So it's one thing if I go tell it, hey, you know, would you scan this this email I'm going to send and grammar correct it for me or something like that. Fine. If it's not confidential, that's fine. You can do that. If I tell it, you know, can you make me a PowerPoint that does something, that's pretty benign. If I give it that spreadsheet and have it do something, and I'm using the free version, I just threw all of my company information into the public domain.
Yep.
Because
and oh, by the way, it will use it.
Yeah, and it will absolutely use it. And I gave permission. That little box they give you that says I agree that nobody ever reads. That's what it's telling you. It's one of the things that it's telling you. So you know that. So a lot of people are looking at it and saying, no, AI is free. No, it's not.
Well, Kevin, you have said on a couple other, believe it or not, I remember pretty much everything you say, because you said that you use AI for like an exam, where you say, give me a company with X something something, you say it better than I do, and the thing kind of creates the company for you. It's really, you could be putting your company in another piece, but it could be stealing your own company, right?
Or I could be stealing somebody else's
company.
Yeah,
or somebody. I mean, so it's actually, you're putting a thing in, asking it a question, it's helping you out. Meanwhile, somebody else is saying, give me the balance sheet of a company like yours, and there it goes, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, it's again, when I talk about, you know, the value right now is in the use cases, it is companies that are going to help you use your own data with your own tokens, with, you know, with whatever privacy you can gain from that, depending on your agreement with them, and legally what's enforceable, and what you even know. But, you know, as you look at that kind of thing, I talk to business people, I say nobody is allowed to do anything public. If we want to work with our own data, first of all, I don't trust it to use any other data but my own. I don't trust the slop I'm going to get from it. So that's part of the equation.
By the way, that was Webster's word of the year for last year.
Yes, it was.
Tell everybody what it means.
Slop is the bad data that you get from artificial intelligence engines.
Yeah, who invented the word? But it was the Webster's word of the year last year, right?
Yeah, I don't know who the inventor is. Carl Denninger?
No, I... Not me. You don't get to pin this one. This tail does not go on that donkey.
Okay. there's still a lot of bad data. I mean, it's the thing I always tell students is never give your voice. You know, if you want to use the tool, fine, use the tool. I have no problem with that. But you can't turn your voice over to AI because you can't trust it.
It has to be an AI YouTube, because there's no way that this could, they actually have one of the guys who runs one of the AI firms, and I forget, and if I didn't forget it, I wouldn't say anyway, and the interview was, it has to be a jacked up interview, where they're asking the guy, how are you going to make all the money from AI? And the guy's answer was, when we get done with the AI and the AI is doing all the thinking for us, we'll ask AI. I'm sitting there, did Carl do this?
Well, you know, I am the last person to ever bag on the idea of new technology, because I really like technology. Duh. Okay. I only bag on the premise of valuations that most people have with the idea of these supposedly new things. What I see here is classic cyclical double back end leverage driven behavior. By the way, if you want to blow this at someone, I don't know. Stockman's been yelling about this essentially being completely caused by the Federal Reserve and he likes to bag on them. I'll go the other direction with this, because the Fed can only buy in the United States anyway. I mean, not true for Japan, but in the United States, the Fed can only go after this kind of thing, provided that Congress gives it to them. So without Congress, without the congressional deficit spending, not there. And that's just the reality of it. So here we are, and here is, as far as we can tell, it's going to be.
Well, some of the stuff you hear, though, you try and be somewhat of a logical human being, which is kind of hard to do. The one producer, I won't say which one of my producers, but it's not Ricky, has a marketing job, and the entry-level position he has at the place is writing stuff to trick AI into putting the firm, who might be the 20th largest brokerage firm, like number 5 on the list. And I said, well, how do you do that? He goes, well, I use AI. wait a minute. You use AI to trick AI? Well, yeah. if you wrote this down in a novel 40 years ago, you'd be like,
oh, no, yeah. You wouldn't have sold a single copy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, here's another thing to think about. All right, so you probably saw this thing that showed up in the media a couple of days ago, that Anthropic's system allegedly breached 3 different companies' systems, okay, during a test, that it basically broke out of its guardrails. Okay, now there's a couple of problems here. They told the AI that they were testing that it was not connected to the internet. Okay. This is
the one Lou was talking about, where the thing allegedly went everywhere and found out all this information.
By the way, the number of lies in this Anthropic write-up ought to be enough to get every one of their executives indicted and then dragged out in the middle of the public square on conviction. And
Kevin, it's the same one Lou was talking about?
No, okay. Similar, but not the same.
Okay.
It's not. No, this has been happening repeatedly, okay? This is like the news story of the day. I don't know what the particular truths are. I know the company's lying, and here's why. If you were going to run some kind of a test like this in a sandbox, it would be air-gapped. It wouldn't be physically connected to the internet. You don't tell the AI it's not connected to the internet. It actually isn't, okay? There is... It's in a laboratory. You do your test. I do stuff like this with mundane things. All right, I want to test some piece of software that I wrote. I don't want it to be able to be, to go do something or whatever have you. And I don't want somebody being able to connect to it from the outside, because I don't trust its security yet. I'm in the middle of writing it. So it's sitting here on my desk. And it doesn't, the network cable that it's plugged into doesn't go anywhere other than on my own infrastructure. There is no connection to the outside at all, period. It's a separate computer, and there's no link, okay? I take the cord out of the wall. They obviously did not do that. Therefore, the you're not connected to the internet. What you just told somebody—that's like—that's like saying to somebody who likes to rob banks, by the way, the vault's not unlocked. What?
Yeah.
The only thing you can reasonably conclude from these sort of events when they occur, and they're allegedly coming from, from inside the company and their testing and their work, it's being done deliberately, Chief.
Well, there seems to be an awful lot of crazy... I mean, Kevin and I started, before you hopped on, we started talking about the market and the movements and how big they are and some of the valuations. And you look at... You don't want to... I mean, we had a really good day, say, for some of our clients that are long some of these stocks, so I'm not about to denigrate it. But the idea is you see all these balls that are in the air. You see these margin loans. I've never seen margin loans increase by 20% in 3 months. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. Now, yesterday with the run-up in Microsoft, and like you were saying, Kevin was saying earlier, they have a lot of balls in the court, more than most companies, so they're not as affected maybe just by AI as maybe somebody else where that's their whole game. But I'm looking here this morning, now these guys have the revenue per share is roughly $43. All right, so at this price, we're talking essentially 11 times revenue for a company that is that big, that mature. When back in 2000, when the Cisco's of the world got to 11, 12 times revenue, it was like the serious danger zone. And now nobody seems to even care. But I don't see how. I mean, like I said, we have clients that have Microsoft, so I'm happy with that part. But how does Microsoft that revenue per share number says to the three of us, this company is on a growth trajectory that they are, I mean, that valuation should be telling us, this company is on a growth trajectory that 3, 4, 5 years ago, they could like double. Now, pulling the inflation out of it, okay, how does Microsoft double, for God's sake? I mean, or if they do, how do Apple and all these other companies, the top 10, how do they all double with them?
Chief, they don't. You're talking about, I mean, this is the trees grow to the sky thing when you get down to it, all right? Because here's the reality. Let's just say that all of these claims that are made for AI being able to do X, Y, and Z, let's just, for the sake of argument, even though it's bullshit, let's just say that you accept them as true, all right? Which, you know, okay. We accept them as true. That's our postulate. What do you do with all the humans? By the way, those humans had jobs, earned money, and then spent it in the economy.
Right.
That all disappears. Because when I get laid off, I don't spend very much, do I?
Well, and with the...
Oh, I go crazy.
Kevin, to join a country club at your day.
Time to go off the deep end.
Yeah, well, you know, run up your credit card until, oops.
Oh, sorry, you might as well charge it off now because you ain't going to see a dime out of me.
Well, there you go.
You know, the common expression is that you're not likely to lose your job to AI, but you're going to lose your job to people who know how to work with AI if you don't. I think there's a certain amount of truth to that, in that any technology shift, and again, we're talking about what it can do, what it will do, when it will do, all those kinds of things are factors in this. But I keep going back to the idea that what the state of the art right now is, it's just we're building a crap ton of computing power. However you choose to deploy that computing power, it doesn't necessarily have to be AI to be able to do things that without that much power you wouldn't have done before. So let's just say you can, you know, we can solve the profit model, we can solve the cost structure, all that kind of stuff, then, you know, there will be a lot of jobs that get automated. But I don't think that's unusual in the history of the world.
No, it isn't, but the challenge here, as I have pointed out many times, is that because a computer does not have a BS detector, because it's not human, a very tiny amount of garbage that gets into its training set means that it just produces complete crap. And unfortunately, that amount that has to be garbage for that to happen doesn't go up as the size of the model and the complexity of the model go up.
Yeah, the old adage is that if you drew a little matrix that, you know, it had one axis was smart and stupid and the other one was fast and slow.
Yeah.
You know, what's your best employee?
Well, yeah.
What's your worst employee? Stupid and fast.
Stupid and fast, right. But then here's the other thing that gets really interesting in this sort of a regard, is that the feedback mechanism that causes this kind of fold-back failure is something that you really can't avoid in a world where content starts to be produced by these AIs, all right, and gets out into the into the real world. All right, you take a look at what's on social media today, and 70-80% of this stuff is just, I mean, you know, this thing that's going on in Ceuta right now, okay, the Spanish enclave. The meme stuff that's all AI generated is already there. Within 15 minutes of it starting to be reported, it's starting to show up. If an AI ingests any of that, any of it, everything that it regurgitates or so-called thinks about in regards to that is going to be polluted and worthless. Now, you can't keep that. What happens when that gets into medicine? What happens when it gets into architecture, engineering, electronic design?
Which is why you have businesses saying we will not use it for outside data. It's one thing if you're saying do some market research and tell me what flavor my new juice ought to be. Okay, that's pretty harmless. But you're right. You've got all these applications where people can go out there. And, you know, we're thinking it's going to, we're going to have smart cities that tell us when it's time to do maintenance on bridges and stuff like that. If it is any good, we're kind of screwed.
Yeah. This is not, I mean, you know, people think that this is like not a really huge thing or whatever. This is overcomable. No, it's not. This has always been the problem. Because the truth is that there's no bullshit detector, and yet my cat has one. Okay, I just recently. Kevin, think about this.
I have a funny story to go with that. So go ahead.
Well, here's I mean, this is real world example here. Okay, I put a couple of weeks ago, I made the mistake of putting YouTube's Cat TV up on the big screen in my living room, and the cat went after all the birds and the squirrels and Cat TV. Okay, well, eventually, you know, so I come back into the room and there's paw prints all over the screen, and I'm like, wait a minute, the cat has claws, there's damage potential here, right? Not just, you know, clean it off. All right, that goes away. Then I'm like, all right, let's do this in the way that's not going to happen.
Could be like a dog and knock the TV over, then you got a problem.
Well, that'd be even worse, yeah. Right? But I mean, you know, but the front of the screen on those things is plastic, right? And the cat has sharp pins. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to put a little bird feeder right outside the window on the other side of the glass and the screen. And, you know, get some industrial strength Velcro and put it up there, right next to his cat tree. So now, of course, he becomes very enamored with this, and every time that a bird lands on there and starts eating some of the bird seed, he goes after it. Well, for the first few days, every time the paws go up, the bird flies, because it assumes the cat's going to eat him.
Yeah.
Right? Which in the wild is a fair assumption, right?
It's a very fair assumption, yes.
Yeah, it's a very fair assumption. All right. Within the last couple of days, I've now got a handful of birds that just sit there and look at him while they're pecking at the seed, and he's
they're laughing at him.
They're laughing at him because they know damn well he can't get them. Okay, it did not take them very long to figure that out, and that's a bird. The computer never figures it out.
I want to shift gears a little bit, since we did have the Fed thing this week, and I went through the supply numbers and stuff, and Kevin is always my man in here, and you see it affecting, you know, all different parts of people's lives here. And Ray, I say when he's not around, I say all kinds of really nice things about him, Kevin. I'll say, you know, I got this friend that really is involved in a place where, even though they teach everything, his real mission is to find people that are making $20 an hour, and in 2 or 3 years of, you know, whether it's certificates or whatever, they're making 35 or 40, and their life is a hell of a lot better, which, by the way, is kudos to you, Kevin. And I just, I see what's going on with the Fed and these stock prices and the wealth and the amount of wealth versus people making money. I don't know that even, without saying you shouldn't do it, I'm not saying that the 35 or 42 years, but that person is gaining on it, but they're not really gaining. That's how far, I guess this kind of came home to Papa, the other Papa, but not a Papa, but the guy who works in my building, he does my jobs for people. I'm not odd jobs, he can do full remodeling. He's a terrific handyman. He charges, I don't know, 35, 40 bucks an hour when he comes to my place or something. And he's well worth it. Okay, so he works 8 hours, say 350 on a Saturday or something. Well, he's got a truck that now needs transmission work. And he's telling me, calls me big guy. Oh, big guy, you know, all I do is work and I can't get ahead. Because it's going to be like 12 Saturdays work to get my transmission done. We've totally lost perspective on what regular people are making versus what somebody's costs are. I mean, how does a regular person pay 90 grand for a roof or something like that? I mean, this is shot so far away from us that I don't know how we get it back. I mean, I don't want the crasheroo that Carl's talking about, but the difference between hearing Kevin Warsh talk and somebody else, or, you know, this is not a policy thing. We're taking people off SNAP and saying we want them to go to work. Okay, well, by the way, I don't have a problem with that, because Clinton did that. I mean, it's not like it's a... But the amount of money we're talking about, you know, somebody... I think people should go to work for their health and for all the other stuff that you should be at work to do. But the idea of somebody going and making 15, 18 bucks an hour doing something, the people who make the policy realize that's like pissing in the lake, for God's sake. It's the cost structure, even though you can duck behind these, you know, consumer price numbers and stuff, the cost structure for most people in the last 20 years is totally... I don't even know, have the word for what it's done to people. You guys think I'm wrong on this or right? I mean, I don't know how you get it back. Well,
the way you get it back, Chief, is you take the air out of the balloon, and the problem is that you know your clients, of course, are not going to like that. You're not going to like that. A lot of people aren't going to like it. And
I will say this: my clients will do better than others.
Well, okay, your clients may do better than others. Okay, they're only going to lose half instead of 90%.
I'm going to say they're going to lose 10%.
They're going to lose a lot more than 10.
Depends on where I got my puts.
Okay. The problem is that what ends up, and again, the error that's being made here, and it's being made across the board, is that in 2008... In 2007, when this all started in 2008, I made a decent amount of money. I didn't lose money. I actually made money being short and buying puts. Okay? So, you know, hey, that wasn't so bad, right? Not only did I not get screwed, I actually, you know, did a sort of good thing, right? All right. Problem here is that now the general environment for interest rates, the curve is no longer from the upper left to the lower right. It's from the lower left to the upper right. And it's going to be that way for the next 30 years. And there isn't anything you, I, or anybody else can do about it. I don't care if you're in the government. I don't care if you're in the Federal Reserve. It makes absolutely no difference. There's nothing you can do about this. It is a long wave cycle that has happened in every nation over time. It has been an unbroken long wave cycle in the United States. And by the way, not just the United States. You can track it against gilts and you find the same cycle. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And England's been around for longer than we have. And so it just happens that gilts are, you know, their record is fairly easy to find. And in most other countries, it's not, because, you know, that currency goes away and another one comes, you know, Weimar Germany and everything else. Okay. So the problem with this is that the answer to every economic dislocation since the 1980s, every single time, the answer is print up more credit, throw it in the economy.
Oh, yeah.
You got a virus, and we've got a con man who we now know from the diary, okay, which, by the way, he was stupid enough to write on a federal computer, which means it wasn't his material.
How many presidents believed every word he said? Four?
Well, okay, I'm just saying, idiot, okay, the smartest man on the planet, when it comes to medicine, supposedly, was so stupid that he actually kept a data log, if you will, a personal data log, on a federal machine, which means it belonged to the government from the moment he clicked the first keystroke. And oh, by the way, that's well established. He had zero rights to that material at the point that he did that, because he was a federal employee and he was doing it on federal time and on a federal machine. It's owned by the people of the United States. Whether he likes it or not, that's tough crap.
Okay.
Yeah. Same thing. If he were doing it on a work computer, his employer, you know,
that's exactly right. It's a work for hire. You did it on the clock. It's your employer's material. Period. End of conversation.
Okay. Let me ask a question here. While we still have Kevin, we could do the deep dive in the Fauci thing. And I was the other night, I was having a beer with my lawyer buddies, and we were talking about taking the Fifth and stuff, and how that, you know, everything seems to be in a state of flux. But what I don't understand, and it has to do, you know, Kevin teaches this kind of stuff. It has to do with, I use the term closing your mind, but that's really not what I've done a lot of research on Roosevelt, because when I read The Winds of War, and he essentially used Pug Henry as one of probably 100 people that he had writing him that other people didn't read first, that he got the information right from them. And so that's why he tried, even though he was in a wheelchair, he tried to keep as much open to hearing from other people as ever. Now, we're three good people, but basically in the world we're in, we're three schmucks, and we're doing a podcast, okay? Well, I manage money for people. Carl, you do all your stuff. Kevin does a fantastic job. We're decent guys. We're doing this, I'll use to say, this schlump show. And I've got people writing me from, or sending me stuff from Australia, from Korea. But I don't know if we have 2 people or 20 people listen, and from UK. And I'm getting right. This information, and Carl, you were all over this stuff. Wait a minute, this isn't right. they're talking about people that have antibodies 6 months later, and they're still good, and we got people telling people here, today you don't have the COVID anymore, go get a booster shot.
By the way, 18 months later from me personally.
Well, right. But I'm saying they wanted Manny Weber, got it a week after he was done. He was done with the COVID, which is insane. But,
well, that's nuts.
I've been exposed to it, I'm guessing, 20, 25 times, and after having it myself without ever being vaccinated, and I've been exposed to it since then. 20 to 25 times, you know, right up close and personal to people who would call back and say, oh, by the way, you might want to get tested. No, I don't feel a thing.
Well, my question.
By the way, I got it exactly once. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I all but licked doorknobs. Okay. But here's, you want to know what arguably the most damning.
No, but my question was, how did we, the three of us, essentially smell a rat with a lot of our listeners too, in that how does Trump, Biden, go back to God knows who, how are they so insulated?
They're not. They've got a political agenda to run, and therefore this is, you know, this is how this happens, because here is one of the most galling elements of this.
Okay, but okay, stop for just a quick, that none of the three of us, if we got the email that all of us were reading about the guy in UK that was testing his own antibodies 6 months out, if any of us are in the Oval Office and we get that email, we got to pick up the phone and say, hey, what the hell? How do you not pick up the phone? How do you not have a curiosity about it? We did.
They get insulated from it. So, you know, as an example, one of the things in the diary is Fauci's phone call with Obama, because he was complaining to Obama about, you know, and this was, you know, Obama was gone at that point. He was out, you know, he was no longer president. And he was talking about all the right-wing people going at him and all that kind of, and so Obama says, well, I'll call up Jeff Zients, who, you know, worked in his administration. I think he was OMB director or something like that for him, but still involved. And he said, I'll tell him to mobilize some of the people in the administration to proactively go out and defend me. So, you know, part of it is that you still have these people inside the government, the permanent class of employees, who then can go and they can filter a whole hell of a lot of stuff out that never finds its way to a president.
Well, here's so here's one of the most egregious things in all of this. The copy that is floating around now is actually redacted.
Yeah.
I found the original on the Wayback Machine because the Wayback Machine picks stuff up really quick.
Oh, what is a Wayback Machine?
Okay, so on the internet,
you saw Mr. Peabody, you know.
Yeah,
I know.
So Chief, here's one of the things that I've warned people about many times. Anything you put on the internet, you must assume has been archived by somebody somewhere, and you cannot erase it. It cannot be retracted.
Or they might have actually printed it off.
Well, but point being, it once you put something out there, you have to assume that it is never going to be able to be completely removed. Someone's going to have a copy of it somewhere. Now, there are a couple of entities that actually make it their business to go snapshot things on a regular basis, okay, and stash them. Now, as storage has gotten much cheaper, this, of course, has become very easy to do and not all that expensive. And one of these is called the Internet Wayback Machine. So I can go look at, for example, if I have a URL that, for example, an article on the Wall Street Journal, I can go look it up on there, and if the Wall Street Journal has edited it, then I will find all five versions.
Really? Okay.
Okay. All right. So, and the Wayback Machine is pretty aggressive on crawling things that are publicly available generally and don't have paywalls associated with them, which of course was the case for this. So and this is really amusing, because Rand Paul's excuse for having redacted what he redacted was that it disclosed personally identifiable health information, therefore was a HIPAA issue. No, it's not.
It didn't stop RFK from bringing up the same thing you're about to discuss.
Well, and RFK happens to be right, because HIPAA, first off, only applies to health providers first. Secondly, there is no private right of action within HIPAA. This is something that I have long had a problem with. If you have a physician or a hospital that releases your private health information, whether it's through hacking or whether it's just through malice, there's not a damn thing that you as a customer, as a consumer, can do about it. The government can sue them over it, but you can't. There's no private right of action there. All right? So in any event, what this original unredacted thing showed is that Fauci suffered a pulmonary infarction. Not an infection, an infarction. In other words, the same thing as a heart attack, but in the lungs. Okay? Now, that is a known side effect of the jabs.
Really?
And had he not had immediate access to Walter Reed, which he did and used, it probably would have killed him.
That's unreal.
All right. Now this, while he's out there telling everybody to go get boosted.
Well,
we're talking about 2021 here.
Well, I mean, when you say, and we all said, it's, you know, these are political things of why the presidents or whoever should be at least have the same access to stuff as we did, for God's sake. And it's one thing for the three of us put out a revenue plan and we find out, you know, it didn't work out exactly as we wanted and somebody's stealing, right? Well, if it turns out the guy who's doing all the stealing was our biggest contributor at the last campaign, you know, your instinct might be, maybe ours wouldn't be, but the instinct might be, well, let's let this one go. But if people are actually dying, that's kind of a whole different brand of ball, isn't it? I mean, there's no...
Well, you think so.
Yeah.
Well, Chief, you have to understand the sort of megalomania and malignant narcissism that is at play within people at this level of the government. The entire government hates you. And I don't care if you're on the left or the right, the answer to no matter what the issue is sit down and shut the F up.
Yeah.
Okay. You saw the same, the Fauci thing. All right. First off, legally speaking, if you've been pardoned, listen, there's an 1890s Supreme Court decision that says if you've been pardoned, you can't take the Fifth Amendment, period. End of conversation. There is no bullshit, a Supreme Court ruling on this from the 1890s. It has never been countermanded. It stands. And by the way, as a federal employee, any attempt to prosecute him in state court is removable to federal, at which point the pardon stands. Okay? So, and that is because he has qualified immunity as a federal employee. And at all times material, within his remit as NIH director.
There's different points of view on this.
I understand that. I'm just saying that okay, fine. So he wants to go ahead and try to argue that, whatever have you. Okay? Here's the reality. He presented something as safe and effective that personally screwed him. And his answer, and everybody else's, on both sides of the aisle, every single Democrat in that hearing room, their answer was, not only was the questioning rude, it was invalid to do in the first place. Sit down and shut the F up.
I can't believe people are making this into a Democrat-Republican thing.
Wait a minute, I'm not. You think I'm making this a Democrat thing. The current president... Our current president, who happens to be a Republican,
maybe
3 days. Maybe he's really a communist, or maybe he's really he's a funny Austrian painter.
I don't know about that, but hopefully not.
I'm starting to think that the entire government's full of Austrian painters. All right, just a couple of days ago, he comes out on national television and says, "Oh, you got problems with AI data centers using all the water because they're cheap bastards and they're using evaporative cooling instead of closed loop, which is certainly available. I used to build data centers for a living, for Christ's sakes. I know what I'm talking about here. The whole reason they're using evaporative is it costs less money. However, it raises everybody else's water costs because it uses ridiculous amounts of water in that situation. Same situation with power. Oh, by the way, they can't be bothered to put up sound reduction material, so now you've got sound pollution problems all over the place, and cities, towns, and states are pushing back against this. And what does he do? He gets up there and says, "Oh, you don't like it? That's tough crap. Sit down and shut the F up."
Well, just real quick comment on Fauci. We got to go to break. We haven't done a break yet, but I had this conversation with an attorney friend of mine, and he said, "I did a big piece on pardons several years ago. I'm going to dig it out." He goes, the first iteration on pardons, even though it was expanded, like you said, Carl, in terms of the way the kind of, he goes, the definition, the classical definition of pardon is you're pardon for a crime or for something you were accused
of. Correct. These blanket things is an open. They're valid.
He goes, they are pretty valid, because I think there was a case back in 1897 I was reading this morning that you can do this, but it kind of blows your definition. And like this guy's name is Bill, he goes, this is almost like a grant of immunity for something. And he goes, now, if something like that, he goes, clearly the guy who's dragging in front of the Senate, Cruz, it appears his motive is to put the guy in jail or to do something to him. Okay, well, he goes, if that's the motive of the guy, then clearly he thinks that there's a hole in the immunity. Well, if there's a hole in the immunity... There's a hole in
then
the...
Then he has a Fifth Amendment. And he goes,
one thing sort of leads to another. He goes, plus, you could be real sneaky, and if he says something that the state of New York says, well, wait a minute, we're going after him. The pardon doesn't cover a state thing.
Well, but that's why I said they're removable, though. That's which is a well-tested principle.
Well, I'm saying, but he goes, the whole thing is so up in the air now that you can't...
Right.
That the definitions are almost... Because what does it mean to give somebody from immunity when you haven't figured out what he's immune from?
the way this was all done was a load of crap across.
It started with Tricky Dick, and all the guys around him got prosecuted.
Absolutely.
Anyway, SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 246. We're still way up, not as much as we came in, but it's the fact that we're up after yesterday is a is a very bullish statement. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Lower North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 240. We've got over in Asia, Dow's up 240. Dow didn't make it all the way back yesterday, but, you know, that was really something you can look at. Nikkei up 2,400. It's 4%. Wow. Hang Seng up 25. That's 0.1%, so not much there. Shanghai up 27.7%, so bullish over there. The Korean stock market it rebounded like 15% or something after everybody got margined out like 2 days ago. What a goat bleep that is over there. DAX up 68.3%, FTSE up 20.2%, CAC up 65.8%. So generally bullish everywhere, even after yesterday. Bonds, again, we've talked about this with Carol and Kevin. Now we're pushing 4.7 on this 10-year. Not good on that number. Oil up $1.72, $85.31, so it's not coming back. RBOB 325, it's actually down 2 cents, so figure you're 390 to 440, depending on the taxes in your state. Gold, it was up yesterday, now it's down today, down $53, $41.06. Can't seem to put two or three good days in a row together. FX, 114.86, and the Japanese yen briefly strengthened. It's up to 160. Okay, up, and I say up to, because as it goes down, it means the yen gets stronger. It was 163. So the question is, are they intervening? And if they are they selling U.S. Treasuries to get the cash to intervene with? Which is would not be all that good for us. Crypto down $1,100, 63.574. Yikes. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs, Sox, both win.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at... Oh, sorry. Give me 1 second. We're looking at 72 degrees right now with a high of 81. Humid with increasing cloudiness, periods of rain, and a thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight will remain humid and rainy, so watch out for flash flooding. Low tonight is 68 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 94 degrees right now with a high of 116. Mostly sunny and very hot with a temperature tying the record high from 2020. Tonight, clear to partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 92 degrees. Traffic, today is day two of Lollapalooza Music Festival, so the city and the roads will be crowded today. But we're looking pretty good for right now. Iman Kennedy from Montrose is 11 minutes, 24 minutes. Iman Edens from Lake Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf is 25 minutes. We're looking at 18 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan is 26 minutes. Sports, yesterday the White Sox walk off the Yankees for the second time in a row. Score was 2-1 for the Sox after 11 innings. Cubs also beat Cardinals after 10 innings. And today we have Yankees at Cubs at 1:20 p.m., Diamondbacks at Guardians at 6:10 p.m., and Sox at Rays at 6:10 p.m. as well. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
So, Kevin, Yankees
he's
are
gone.
He's gone. Okay, so the Yankees are here 7 days in a row. I wonder what bar they're going to every night.
Well, there you go. Let's go do it.
Yeah, it's that's why with the Cubs playing day games, it was a big advantage because Chicago had 4 o'clock bars.
Yeah, well,
some baseball player.
I suppose.
I mean, if you got a night game, you got a chance to recover. Day game, maybe not so much.
Maybe not so much. Exactly. Just say. Well, Chicago. When I lived there, that was one of those things that until I moved to Chicago, I'd never heard of a bar being open that late.
Well, it all went back to shift work.
I'm just saying, yeah. I just never. Okay, 2 o'clock was the absolute latest I'd ever seen before I moved out there.
Well, the even odder part is they used to open at 7.
Well, I know.
And in Milwaukee, they used to open at 6.
Yeah, well, like I said, until I lived in Chicago.
I never got into this loop.
But by the way, there was, it's probably gone now, but up fairly close to Evanston, but not in Evanston proper. There was a burrito shop that was open until like 5:30. And so after you were in the bar till 4 o'clock...
Oh, yeah, well, you got to eat something.
And by the way, they were $5 burritos that were as big around as your forearm.
Did you ever go to the... there were some bars on Clark Street. Did you ever go to the Belden Deli?
Mm-mm, no.
When I was younger, they were 24 hours, and the amount of people in there having... They had the world's best salami and cheese omelets in the world at 4 in the morning.
But by the way, here's something. Here's an interesting little fact that just popped up on my forum. I've got a few people that are we're playing around with this whole Amazon thing. Do you realize that this $53 billion accounting entry, which Amazon put up last night, which is not cash. Okay, you can't spend it.
Well, they got the $60 billion in cash from the government.
Well, but this is not.
I know.
Look, their free cash flow is negative. Okay. For the last
even with the $60 billion from the government,
it's their free cash flow last quarter is negative. Okay, this tells you exactly how much BS is going on in the market right now with all this stuff. That $53 billion accounting entry increases the total earnings of the S&P 500 across the entire 500 companies by about 2%.
Well, $53 billion is a lot of money, and when it's income.
Well, $53 billion is a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of cash, right?
Yeah.
Except it's not cash. That's the whole problem. And oh, by the way, the the other side of this sheet is that, as I've been saying, this trend change from the lower now going from the lower left to the upper right. You see what's happened between the IRX and the TNX in the last couple of days?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a straight vertical spike. And, oh, by the way, all this borrowing that corporations do and that the government does, it all rolls over. And when it does, you're going to be paying
more.
It
might roll over.
What is the alternative if it doesn't?
Well, the alternative is Japan needs the dough to prop up their currency. The alternative is UK is pissed off at Trump and cuts back. I mean, they've made up for Japan in the last year.
Well, I'm just saying, if it doesn't, but if you're a corporation and you can't roll it, bankrupt.
Oh, yeah.
You're done. Okay? So
you could go out for equity, but boy, that's going to cost.
Oh.
Yeah.
If you issue into that kind of a situation.
Yeah, you got trouble.
Yeah, you don't want to be doing that. You know, you want to see 60% single day losses in the stock market.
Well,
names.
You see, we see these nasty little creatures floating in the air around us. All right, I mean it's I mean basically that's what it, you know, is.
That's one way to put it.
Well,
yeah.
I was on, you know, Joel's show, and I go, well, it was with his buddy Brent, and I go, you know, I said these are not tradable. You can't say, oh my God, look at the margin interest or margin loans in the last 3 months, that's negative. If I need to buy puts now because everybody else is going to read it between now and noon, and when they read it, it's going to. You can't do that because, and you know.
Well,
now,
you're going to get your head cut off if try it. Yeah.
Plus, now we have a president that's going to sell access to inside information to people that got money, which is.
You want to talk about something that made the hair stand up on the back of my neck? That was
Yeah, I mean, we're finding somebody who's. Who's defining a new morality, and he's not the first, but he's taking it to a new level, and people seem willing to roll with it because maybe they don't have a basis in morality. I don't know. I mean, some of this stuff to me is like, can anybody imagine in Ronald Reagan's day when he did his, what was it, Saturday morning talk, if he were to sell the content of his speech while the markets, plus the markets went open on Saturday. What if he did it Friday at 10 o'clock and he sold the contents of his speech to 15 different firms?
I mean, that
would have been, you know, that would have been a lynching expense. It wouldn't even have been an impeachment thing. But now, what's the problem with that? He's just making a few bucks. I mean, we've let people that have, to me, zero morals define our morality. And I don't see how that, anyway, but I'm saying the ball's in the air, our margin loan's going way up. We seem to be having more and more debt that we're paying higher and higher for. Now, you know, Trump's sneaky way to raise taxes is to keep doing this tariffs. We have a society that because some people, for whatever reason, believe the guy, think that somehow that's not a tax on them. Well, we just went through, we're supposed to have education in this country.
Well, it's a tax on somebody.
We just went through a situation where people here paid these taxes to right. somebody, Amazon, Walmart, Nike, you the hell name it. The things declared, which it should have been from day one, I mean, the tariff is, this kind of tariff is a tax that has come out of Congress. Supreme Court finally says that, and one of the buffoons, Kavanaugh, says, oh, by the way, if you want to use it, like, here's another law you can use for a while. So Trump jumps on that. Well, not only did the people here pay the tax, now the companies are getting the money back, not giving it back to you. And
but
now
you're not getting it,
yeah,
right.
And now we're going to try it all over again. Well, the first time, I'm going to say, well, you know, fool me once, shame on you, but he's doing it again. And people still, I have conversations, well, what's the problem with a tariff? What would you say to
well,
a 10...
Well, so far he's getting away with it.
Yeah. I said, what would you say to a 10% sales tax? Well, I wouldn't want that. It's the same thing. No, it's not. Trump tells me that Germany's paying it. Well, okay. Trump could tell you that you don't have a tummy ache, but if you do, you do. I mean maybe you should just tell people they're not sick if they weren't going to believe it or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, I went and I saw the hooker a week ago, and now I got something dripping out of you-know-where.
Yeah.
And boy, that's not really an STD, right?
I mean, you wonder, you know, these are policy issues that really are affecting the economy in ways that I could never have dreamed when I was in grad school. I mean, nobody would ever do these things. And we got a Fed chairman who's really going to take care of inflation, and yet since the 3 months he's in there, the balance sheet's growing again, the money supply is flying up again.
Well Chief, the press conference. Now here's the thing. I think one thing you have to pay attention to. I don't know if you watched it.
He's getting. He reminds me. Well, the guy's in the office said, "God, he's worse than Janet Yellen."
Well, I mean, I watched the whole thing. Okay, and. The interesting thing to me was that he's getting a lot of pushback now from people in the press. All right, he basically got bent over the table and had people had their way with him for what had gone on there. And that's a problem, all right, if you think about it. That really is an issue. And because at some point this fever breaks. And precisely when, I don't know, all right? I mean,
well,
that's... You're
I'm
going
to follow up on what you just said, even though you said it but didn't say it. I'm going to ask you directly. This was on Wednesday.
Right.
The guy gets done talking, the market takes a dump. Serious dump.
Sure
the
did.
Next morning, I got to believe that the phones are ringing in the Oval Office. What is your boy doing? You said he was going to fix this stuff. My market's down like it got a pin stuck in it today. I would love to see what and where Fed expenditures and either just regular reserves or purchases of what or maybe even the market yesterday. I would love to see those numbers. And I wonder who's had
well,
something it can't just be regular people said, God, the market's down so much it's a buy here. It can't be that.
Well, Chief,
it could
Fed
be, I guess, but
the New York Fed trading desk data is public
on an overnight or daily basis.
Yes, it's in real time actually, because I used to track that stuff back in the
how else could they do it if it didn't come from there, if they wanted to keep it a secret?
Well, legally, there isn't a way to do it because that's those open market operations. Now, I stopped paying attention to open market operations after the 08 crash because they stopped being useful as an actual signal. Maybe I need to go back and start paying attention to that again because that's where those all occurred. But that was back. That was the whole thing when Geithner was at the New York Fed and everything else, right? Before all of that craziness, and those were very reliable. But our Federal Reserve. So this is one of the
well, whatever they're doing, they're doing it coordinated because all the rest of this, the calls must be going out to the other central banks overnight.
Well,
all of a sudden everybody's back up.
Yeah,
South Korea up 15% overnight. And that's what started the whole thing.
Well, the Korean move. I mean, SK Hynix was up something like 30. which I mean, that's what?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that, you know, they tripped the limit breakers a couple of times. The problem with all of this, and of course, the Japanese government is intervening. They get very nervous about this young carry trade thing, and the funny thing is that you hear people saying, well, you know, they want it to unwind, they want to unwind, they want to unwind. Well, if the Japanese central bank and the Japanese government want to unwind the carry trade, they can very easily force that to happen. That is absolutely within their power to do. They clearly do not want it to occur, or they would do that.
Well, they're up to 2.8, which is the highest they've been in God knows how long.
Well, it's the thing that I think is going to force this issue. And by the way, you know who McClellan is, right? Tom McClellan?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know, I mean, he's been around forever, right? And, you know, the McClellan oscillator. Hello.
Yep.
He has pointed out that there are several technical signals that are out there right now. Just one recently was talking about with regards to the VIX, which, you know, you look at the VIX right now, it doesn't look like it's indicating anything.
It was
really
down from
terrible.
Like 24 to 17 yesterday.
Well, I'm saying it's like trading, yeah. You know, like 17, right? It's like, you know, you're like, oh, that's not telling me that, like, you know, the world's coming to an end or anything like this. But he points out that some of the internals within there, when you look at this from a standpoint of, the oscillator values and things like this, it's telling you that the instability that's in the market is structural. That despite what you're seeing in price today, that this is a structural thing. Now, the problem with that is it's not a timing indicator. All right, these kinds of signals are not.
I think a lot of what I was saying, I don't know if you heard earlier, I was talking to Kevin, a lot of this has to do with who are the bids and offers are now. There's no depth of standing orders like there used to be. And whenever if Microsoft or the Spoos want to run up, everybody just pulls their offer.
Well, this is one of the back around the time of the crash. The game then was
which crash?
The 08 blow up.
Okay.
The game was to try to spoof bids and offers in the futures that you did not intend to execute, which is a violation of exchange rules, and it's actually illegal on top of it. It's illegal under the Exchange Act. But, of course, the CME was, even though they could see it, at a level that you and I can't. And I certainly can't see it at the level.
Doesn't mean they're motivated to do something about it.
Well, they did absolutely nothing about it, okay? And I've several times I've talked about the fact that, you know, I raised hell on a video that I put up over the 4th of July holiday when I was able to see it very clearly and document it because, of course, you know, liquidity is extremely thin when the futures are open, but nothing else is. And I'm sitting there watching a movie, looking at this, going, oh, well, this is exactly the pattern I've seen before, but now I can actually prove it because there it is. Come, go, come, go, come, go. And so did this, and I got a call from the guys over there, and they were extremely pissed off that I didn't call them. And I was like, oh, really? So, like, I'm seeing something on a retailer trading terminal that you guys can't see, and you've got the best access to anybody.
The SEC calling here after 9/11 wondering how Dr. J found out that there were people buying puts. I'm like,
puts, right? I'm like, excuse me.
I said, I'm his office mate, but how did you guys not see it? We saw it. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, if I can see it, how come you didn't when you're sitting on it, right? So, yeah.
Well,
I made the statement a
minute ago about the market fabric. And again, it's gone way beyond, you know, the old days, and I'm not saying you go back to that, but basically, IBM traded in one spot. This is even before there was a futures, right? So right. Say IBM's trading 200. Well, it's 200 to 200 and 8, 200 to 225. That's a bid and offer. Well, there could be, you know, 20,000 shares offered at 3/8. There could be 40,000 and a half. Because people, if they had a price they wanted to sell or buy, they would put it in. They would put it in. It was called the specialist order book. So if somebody came in and said, I want to buy, you know, a million shares, they'd say, okay, wait a minute, there's 10,000 offered at an eighth, there's 50,000 offered at a quarter, and the specialist said, I'll do some at 5/8. So he may take 300,000 shares, but the other 700 were in his book. And when they'd say, okay, they'll pay 5/8, well, if you're offered at a quarter, you're going to get filled at 5/8. not at a quarter. They're not going to take you out at a quarter when the print's going up at 5/8. There was some gentlemanly stuff there. Okay, well now there's none of those kinds of rules, so they're going to run over with you. So what ends up happening is if somebody comes in and you or somebody who's aware of the order flow, which a lot of these guys are, because they're paying people for the knowledge of the order flow, which is why your free commission really isn't free. It's getting paid on the other side so somebody can right. shop your order. But nobody wants to hear that. All they want to hear about it is being free. Well, now what happens is when this order comes in, the person who's offered it a half immediately knows it or sees it and yanks his half offer. So now the guy's wanting to buy 1 million shares and there's nothing in front of him. He might have to print it up $2 or $3 before somebody says, well, I'll do it there. And that's why you see these, especially when you see it in the you know, if I was a god for a second, the first thing I'd do on these earnings, I'd have stopped the market every morning at 10 o'clock. It's the earnings amount. You come out with your earnings while everybody's here. You have your conference call between 10 and 11, and you restart trading at 11 o'clock. You don't do it at 4 in the afternoon when nobody. What are we trying to accentuate this crap? I mean, what are we trying to do?
Well, that's yeah, that is exactly the sort of circumstance that, Chief. What we have now, it's like I said in the article that I put up the other day, sit down and shut the F up, right?
Yeah.
Is that it doesn't matter, the Fauci thing is a symptom. It's not the disease.
Without a doubt. By the way, this Japanese 2.8 I talked about, last time their interest rates were 2.8 was 1997.
Yeah. Well, but the reality of it is that the market continues to believe because it has 30 years worth of history that's what's in people's heads, all right, is that, yeah, we know that this $53 billion that Amazon reported is not cash because we actually, in 30 seconds of reading their earnings report, you can see that, right? It's not money. It's gain. It's not even gain on sale. It's gain on some mythical valuation because it's not a publicly traded firm.
Yeah, it's something we think we're going to make money on, but we may or may not.
Supposedly the value of this entity that the company holds an equity stake in went up, and therefore by accounting rules it has to go on your balance sheet, right? I mean by the way, there's nothing wrong with that rule per se, based upon how the law is written. Is it misleading? Well, that depends. Do you need to spend the money? If you do, then it's very misleading because, A, you ain't got it. Secondly, there's no market, so you can't sell the stake and turn it into cash. That's not a possibility. Well, you could try, but in a private market, you're not going to get anything close to what you think it's worth, right? That's the way those things are because they're ridiculously illiquid.
Yeah.
And so you've got the same sort of situation saying, well, I have a gain, and it's exactly what happened in the 2007-2008 timeframe. I have a gain on these negative amortization loans. Okay, you do, but it's not cash. You can't spend it. And if you have, and by the way, if you have to liquidate that in order to turn it into cash, somebody's going to look at that and say, wait a minute, that guy has $60,000 worth of income on a $500,000 note.
Well, what's
the odds of him being able to pay that?
I don't want to beat up this Japanese thing too much, but right now our horrible situation is our national debt is 122% of our GDP, which,
right.
I mean, in 1950 it was 52, got down to 34, 2000 it was 56, so it's pretty friggin' awful. Now, if you go to Japan, I think the number is 256%.
Yeah.
Okay,
and now, it hasn't blown up.
So when you start talking about their national debt is $11 trillion, their GDP is $4.4 trillion. So when you lob another 2% on top of that number, ouch.
Well,
why should we care? They're only Japanese people. we've become this racial society. But the fact is, we owe them $1.1 trillion. Okay,
yeah,
so that's a problem.
Okay, so here's something that people need to keep in mind. People say that America can get away with this because Japan has. One thing you have to remember about Japan is that Japan now, I don't know that it's true anymore, but historically speaking, Japan has had an extremely high personal savings rate, which is not paying down debt because they don't walk around with credit cards. When I was over there in business, these guys, you know, you go out to get lunch or whatever, and they pulled 100 yen notes out of their wallet to pay for it, okay, 1,000 or 10,000 yen notes. There was no plastic. In fact, the one time when I was over there, and we're talking about fairly high-level executives here that I was meeting with, that actually turned around and tried to use a credit card, the girl in the restaurant literally didn't know how to run it. They had a Zon machine in there, but she literally didn't know how to use it. She had to go find somebody else because it's that rare. Now, I don't know if that's true anymore, but if you have that kind of savings, classical economics tells you that savings is investment, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's what classical economic theory tells you. Well, it is if savings is actually savings, if it's actually cash. The problem is the way that we compute GDP and the way that our reports show it, paying debt down is considered savings. That's in the figures. So if I have a $10,000 credit card debt and I pay down $5,000 of it, our GDP report counts that as savings. Now, that's not true, but that's how it's accounted for in our GDP calculations.
It's a tough one. When you say it's one of the most iconic equations in all of economics, and basically, you know, figure a bank. Where if somebody puts $100 in the bank that they saved up, that now becomes available for somebody else to borrow. Because when you figure your building, I try and take this down to the simplest so people can understand it, maybe so I can understand it. If you're going to build a building, you need steel, you need concrete, you need toilets, you need stuff. But you also, probably the person building the building doesn't have the $50 million it takes to build a building. But the building is supposed to have some kind of a return on investment of, say, 10%, we'll pick a good number. Well, that person should be able to go out and borrow money from somebody who maybe has money and is not in, other than put in a bank, has no other, or the bank itself. That's what the bank is supposed to be, as an intermediary. They say, this is a great investment here. They're going to pay us 7% or 6.5%. Right. And that's, so now the person who puts his deposit in the bank is going to make 3.5 or 4, and the rest is in the salaries and all the other kind of crap that goes with the bank. So theoretically, the savings now becomes available for somebody else to use for factors of production, which becomes investment. And that's how the equation actually has to be, right?
Right, but that's not how it's reported today.
Well, but in I guess if I didn't have any savings and I owed somebody $500 and I paid off 400 of it, it still wouldn't be considered savings, but it sort of gets me closer. It's not exactly savings. It's not available for anybody else to borrow.
Right, and that's exactly the point.
Even though I am closer to being whole, it kind of acts like savings, but it doesn't because nobody else can borrow it.
Right, and that's and so the violation. See, but this, Chief, again. This is, you know, the sky is green. No, it's not. It's blue. Right?
What was the thing? If you can't change, if the facts don't, the legend don't meet, doesn't meet the facts, print the legend. I mean,
yeah, but this is there's so many of these kinds of things.
Yeah, we'll talk. We'll talk on Tuesday. And what do you think? Are we going to keep flying back there, or are somebody going to pull a plug?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I am very curious. You know, in the pre-market, Amazon is, immediately after they announced their earnings, it was way up.
It's up $26. It's 11% is like a lot of money, a lot of move on a stock that
big.
Well,
by the way, Microsoft had the same kind of a move.
We were
right?
15% yesterday.
Yeah. So I mean, there's where the Nasdaq came from, and then Microsoft.
So what do they have? Seven. Let me see. I got it up here. They have. 7.5 billion shares outstanding. So $60 is $430 billion in market cap, which is 1.5 times the biggest company in the world in 2010 on one day.
Yeah,
I'm saying these numbers. You compare that to Kevin not just trying, but helping people go from $15 an hour to $30. God, well, or having some poor guy getting SNAP benefits going to work for $12 an hour. What's the point?
I look at stuff like this, and I think there's, you know, the instability is very dangerous.
Yep.
We are adding on to it on a daily basis. And when you look at the reactionary moves, all of which I'm reasonably sure, just from their speed, is coming from some AI that's reading these things and doing it.
Maybe it's money for nothing and the chicks for free, as they used to say.
Well, maybe for a little while. At some point, you know, the problem is, Chief, that at some point, you have to be able to write the check to the vendor.
Well, you would think. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 242. Have a nice weekend. Lollapalooza's here, so that's interesting. But it's supposed to rain all day tomorrow. That wouldn't be good. But anyway.
I'm not. You know what? I never was involved in that even when I did.
Well, one of the lovely bartenders at the Tripoli was heading to a... some of the bands, they can play places afterwards. She was going to one of the best bands, was playing somewhere at 11 o'clock last night, so she was heading over.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure the people watching would have been fine. They wouldn't have been looking at me, but whatever. Anyway, back on Monday. Nice job, Ricky. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.